Good morning. We are here live on Facebook. This is Lizzie and Justin for Turning Towards Life. This is a third space offering, and we are on week
46 or 7.
So we are heading towards 50, which is a ridiculous miracle. And Justin this week is in Croatia, and I am in Findhorn in Scotland. So we have done a very wonderful little technical dance to get ourselves online, but we've made it at only 9:07, which is a bit of a miracle given I was just scrabbling around trying to make it all happen. So a very good morning to everybody, and I'm very delighted to be here to be reading this wonderful offering that Justin's brought to us and to be talking about it today.
Good morning, everyone. Yes, I'm in Croatia with my family. We're in a very fortunate position of having been able to take quite a long family holiday this year. And I'm going to give you a little view. You can see where I am by the sea. We are right under the flight path of the planes flying into Split Airport, which is about 10 miles down the coast. So every now and again, whilst we're talking, there may be the roar of jets overhead, because as our very lovely host in this house that we're staying in was explaining to me yesterday, Croatia's economy is really in trouble, but they've had this extraordinary possibility of a beautiful sea and warmth, and that brings increasingly large numbers of people here, which in a way that I haven't appreciated. So there are flights coming over really a lot, and there really are a lot of people in this extraordinarily beautiful country. And I'm very glad to be here, and I'm somewhat amazed, as I always am, by the wonders of the technology that allows us to do this, so that Lizzie and I, we can speak to one another, and other people can watch, and we can be pretty much anywhere in the world so far that we've managed to be. We've managed to make this work. So I want to say a tiny little bit about this source before we read it. So one of the people whose work in the world I really deeply admire is a man called Norman Fisher. And we give out one of Norman's very brilliant books on compassion as one of the standard books that we have on our professional coaching course. And Norman's of particular interest to me, not only because of the kind of person that he is and the way that he teaches, but also because he has a deep Jewish background, which is shared heritage with me, and interest in that, and also a long engagement with Zen Buddhism. And he's often positions himself right on the intersection between these two cultures. He teaches in both worlds, and he's an integrator of both worlds. And he's done this amazing thing, I think, which is to see that the biblical Psalms, which are so often translated in an incredibly florid way when they get translated into English, that makes them very hard to engage with, are at heart have an extraordinary simplicity if you really strip them down to their essence. And so he's done this book of Zen-inspired translations of the Psalms, which is an attempt to get back to the simple kind of truthfulness that's right at the heart of it. And this psalm has been, this one, Protect Me From Fear, which is actually Psalm 16, has become really important to me in recent weeks, because it's a poem of return to knowing that we're not on our own. And this is one of the things I realize I've been grappling with for a long time, is the feeling of being separate and alone, and also of grieving loss after loss after loss that has me feel on my own. And anyway, we'll all see maybe as we read this psalm how it's an invitation back into knowing ourselves always as in relationship with something that's way, way, way bigger than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I've been, Lizzie, thinking a lot about this because of the way that we've been talking about what faithfulness is over recent weeks, and what it is to be in a relationship. So there'll be much more to say when we read this, of course, but I'm going to read this now. So this is from Norman's book. It's called Opening to You. Protect me from fear, for I place my trust only in you. My soul has said, you are my guardian, sole foundation of my happiness. and I will find my delight in all that is yours on earth. As for all that shuts you out, great will be their sorrow. I will not pour out their offerings, nor call their names, even in my dreams. You, you, only you, are my share and my cup. You have drawn my lot, and it has fallen out agreeably. Lovely indeed is my estate. My heritage is pleasant to me. I bless you who brought me to this day. And even at night, in the trying times, my trembling body is tethered to you. Your presence is always before me in all the deeds of my hand. I will not be shaken from it. So my heart rejoices, my spirit is glad, and my body rests secure. For you will not abandon my soul to the darkness. You will not suffer me to be overwhelmed in terror. You will teach me the path toward me. Your presence is my sweetest joy. Your right hand is my chief delight. Always.
I place my trust only in you. Protect me from fear, for I place my trust only in you. My soul has said, you are my guardian, sole foundation of my happiness, and I will find my delight in all that is yours on earth. As for all that shuts you out, great will be their sorrow. I will not pour out their offerings, nor call their names, even in my dreams. You, only you, are my share and my cup. You have drawn my lot, and it has fallen out agreeably. Lovely indeed is my estate. My heritage is pleasant to me. I bless you who brought me to this day. And even at night in the trying times, my trembling body is tethered to you. Your presence is always before me. In all the deeds of my hand, I will not be shaken from it. So my heart rejoices, my spirit is glad, and my body rests secure. For you will not abandon my soul to darkness. You will not suffer me to be overwhelmed in terror. You will teach me the path toward life. Your presence is my sweetest joy. Your right hand is my chief delight, always. This is so very beautiful, isn't it? It's like kind of, I don't know, drinking something like the elixir of life or something for me, hearing it and having it come through my sound of my voice.
I think whoever wrote this psalm, and then of course Norman as well in his translation, is doing something, reminding of something that so many of the great poets remind us of, and I'm thinking about Rumi and Hafiz, who we've read as well, which is, it really helps us to trust that whatever we call it, and it's interesting to notice, I think Norman made a very big point of this, that he doesn't use words like God in any of his translations of the Psalms, because I think he rightly says, we've got all kinds of trouble about a word like that. But we need to know ourselves. It really helps to know ourselves as held in something and in relationship with something that is, in essence, was two things. First of all, is alive and is also a form of love. And that our, well, you know, there's a whole sort of critique of our culture we could make, which is that we took this out. And in the name of pure reason, which lost us a lot, and now also we're having a hard time finding things to fill the space that's left, so we're grasping onto, you know, I'm just realizing this when I get caught in the obsession about checking email or looking at Facebook or something, which I try more and more not to do, and I've taken them, I don't have them on my devices, I realize that I think what I'm longing for is what this poem is, the deeper something that this poem is inviting, which is to know myself in deep relationship, where I can feel the gratefulness for having been given the chance to reach this moment, and I can feel myself being in reciprocal contact with everything. And when I forget it, I reach for what's the word, like copies, like cheap copies of this. And I think that that's what so many of us are doing. We're reaching for a cheap imitation of something really deep that we've forgotten,
yeah.
And that is deeply part of what it is to be a human being, is to know this. So that's a bit of a new revelation for me as we're talking, that that's what a kind of addiction that so many of us have got into, that doesn't look or feel like an addiction, is really a longing to know ourselves as this line, this is the line that gets me every time. Even at night in the trying times, my trembling body is tethered to you.
I know.
I'm just about to mute, there's a plane coming. So you'll have to say things.
Yes, I've got lots of things to say. So I'm wondering how to articulate my response to this poem, because it feels slightly beyond my reach to say things about it. I guess part of what I want to say is how maybe we can orient to this poem, this psalm, if this feels quite alien to us. This isn't one to filter through our rational, cultured minds and try and make sense of it or something. So I think the invitation might be for us to feel into or allow it to wash over us, in terms of a quality to relate into it with, because it seems to me a very, as you say, very deep, un-everyday something that's being pointed to, that's being spoken of through these words. And I feel it through a kind of, it feels to me like to be in the realms of calling, you know, when you feel drawn to things and you don't really know why, or you have an intuition about something, or there's a sneaky feeling that you have that you should do this or be with this person, or, and sometimes that can be really strong as well, but it doesn't feel like something that's dealing with our kind of habitual everyday way of going around as a human being in the world. And I say that also because I think for me, this is right there all the time, but unless I turn towards it and pay attention to it, it's the very thing I'm also trying to avoid, as well as it really pulling me. So it feels like these words are pointing into something that I feel very close to and very far away, kind of simultaneously. And I also notice the deep relief that I feel when it's read to me or I read it, because it is bringing me into contact with the thing that I am probably most avoiding. But I think when you're avoiding something, it's really, really there. Like avoidance has got a really great, does a really good job, because the thing you're avoiding is often a really big thing that really matters. And I love how this very gently and ordinarily flows my awareness, I guess, my sense of myself into the question that you're bringing, Justin, of what if we aren't random items in a random universe, but that we are held by something, as you say, that there is someone, something. It's not even right, but that there is life in support of us in our most terrified dreams, in our most lonely moments, and that we have on some level dedicated ourselves to that thing that is holding us and we've forgotten it. And then to be reminded of it, it's like, oh, I can remember now, even if it's a glimpse. The remembering feels like it's the holding that a human being is yearning for all the time. And as you say, searching in all the cheap replicas for. And the bit that also gets me, Justin, is when he says, lovely indeed is my estate. My heritage is pleasant to me. Like, I really appreciate that that piece of gratitude is in there for what it is that we are, what it is that I am, that I got born from, the lineage that I am, the person I am, the story I have and the story I've had and will have. It feels like to relate to that with this word pleasant and to see that it has goodness in it seems to be also really linked into this question of, am I alone? Are we alone? Are we separate? And or is there something way, 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 way bigger and mostly unfathomable for our rational minds? Is it actually here? And I'm so grateful that you've brought this, Justin, and that we're just for this week and who knows how much longer in terms of content for Turning Towards, that this spiritual stream, this spiritual feel, we're doing our best anyway to talk about it and have it be between us, even though it feels a really grapply one for me. And I'm really grateful for the challenge of that and the being held in it by sources that come from somewhere different to my ordinary way of being able to write anything or say anything from my own experience. Like if I tried to write about this, I think it might be just like if somebody just typed up a load of gobbledygook or some wingdings or something. So I'm really grateful for the challenge that it is in writing somewhere that we have something to refer to and be in conversation about this.
I think that's one of the reasons why the Psalms are so brilliant, as you know, and they're not uniquely brilliant, they're brilliant in their own way. Why they've endured. And I'm really, well, so much happening for me as you're talking, Lizzie. A couple of things. So first of all, I was really saw in a different way what it is to be able to say, lovely indeed is my estate. And there's one way of, and my heritage is pleasant to me. I bless you who brought me to this day. And it's really easy to see. I realize there's a part of me that goes, reads that line and has a complaint. Yeah, but what about this and what about this and all these things I'd hoped for and everything that's missing. But to read estate as in the way that you read it, which is my humanness, my being alive, not to do with anything else. Of course, there's all kinds of things that are missing maybe and things that could be fixed and all of that's really, really important to pay attention to. A lot of the things that I think are missing aren't even missing, and that's one of also the troubles. When I get into comparison between myself and other people. So it's quite a thing to be able to go, it really is something to be human and to thank. So the you in this psalm, I think we've got ourselves into an awfully difficult twist in the West because we've been fed images of the you, the other, that involve, I don't know, men with white beards in the sky or commanding authoritative rulers or, I mean, any number of sort of images that have to be some magic being in which one believes or not. And I love that that's all taken out in this translation, though it's not even in question, that there is a you, there's always a you that's present. And I feel that you, when I look into your eyes as I'm doing now, and we're talking and I'm with another human being and we're in a relationship that matters, and I can feel that there's me and there's you, and there's also the something, the third something that gives rise to both of us is the you. And I'm sitting here, I look across at the water where I'm sitting, and that's you. Mm. And there are times when I see a mountain and I get that the mountain is you, that everything is you in that sense. And I don't have to have magical thinking or somebody else's idea of it to find myself in those moments when I stop grasping and clinging and feeling afraid. To find myself in relationship with the you-ness of everything that's around. And then I stop seeing myself as essentially alone in a very cold, unforgiving universe that, if I'm very, 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 very lucky, might sometimes go my way, and I desperately want to go my way. And I find myself more in reciprocal, I'm in relationship all the time. And a lot of the time, there are things happening I don't like and I don't want, and there are things happening I do like and I do want. And of that is kind of in a way, because I'm deep in relationship with whatever you is. Mm. It could be you, Lizzie, and it could be you, trees. And now that sounds simplistic to me, and I'm not trying to be simplistic. There's something very deep here, I think, that is an antidote to our, well, to my, let me just say my, seems to me such a mistake to know myself as alone in a cold universe. That's just a, well, for a start, it's a terrible way to live. So if I just go really practical and just say, I prefer to live in a world where I'm in a relationship with a you all the time, and I find a you in everything. When I can do that, life is, there's way more possibility in life. So just be practical. But of course, there's something deeper here as well, which is the sort of dignity and depth of knowing everything as something, as a something to be in relationship with.
Yeah. And what's coming to me, Justin, as you say that, is like a kind of cultivation of a way of being that can integrate these glimpses with normalness. So I, in receipt of this, you reading this to me and me reading it to you, feel contactful with the you, but that's just what it means to me, like in this particular moment, and who knows what that even is in a way. And each of us has the capacity to connect with things in all kinds of different ways, and some people might connect with animals or nature or human beings or art or, you know, anything that gives us that feeling of being connected to something other than my small mind and my complaining heart. And what I feel really compelled to in this moment is to be consciously trying to consider the integration of that into what's going to be happening in my day. So I know that I'll finish this call with you, Justin, and I'm going to walk into a group of people that I haven't seen for a while, and Christopher's really upset with me, my nephew, because I went out this morning for a run and I didn't take him with me, and I'm going to have to be in a conversation with him that there's some repair and relationship to be done. You know, there's various practical things happening, like what are we going to have to eat, and of course all of those things can be like a brilliant excuse for just going to sleep and being in the wrangle. And of course, I am going to be in the wrangle, but I also want to intend to do my best to widen things so that this can be included in that. No matter how unmentionable it feels to me right now, which it does, or unspeakable, it's feels like what I really want is to live that kind of integration of my sense of what this thing is, this you is, that I feel deeply dedicated to and fall asleep to all the time, is to kind of intend to integrate it into the ordinariness of whatever it means to be in a family or in a relationship or at work or whatever, so that it can be, it can infuse everything. I think that's the thing. It feels like it's like a gradual, everlasting infusion that seems to me the most possible, probable something of how to make this be part of, continue to be part of my everydayness, that allows me then to, when I am trembling, to have a slight hope of remembering that I'm not alone in my trembling in the middle of the night, but that there is withness, there is something bigger than my state of fear, something more like me, really present also, that can hold that and allow it to transition as well, and for it not to be here for longer than it might need to be, but to allow it to be here because I know and I have the faith that I can be in it and be with it and be with frightening and terror and fear and worry and anxiety and neurosis and over-analysis and feelings of failure and all of the things that we will inevitably be in as humans. This intention to allow and even entertain that there is something to be integrated into those experiences, and to see if we can remember the glimpses and integrate them into that dailiness, feels like how it might grow as well. My, what feels like kind of fledgling and peeking through a hole, but it's big, like through like the other side of this screen where the hole is, I can feel the largesse, the hugeness of it. But I also know I have a very strong, efficient ego that, whilst I can feel the bigness of it, the little hole I'm looking through tends to be really small until I really dedicate myself to this, for example, when the hole gets bigger. And it's okay for the hole to be small. And it also feels like a safer way to live, like you're saying, like a kind of a more sensible way to live in a way, to let it be more allowed, to allow more in.
So many things that you just said that touched me really deeply when you were saying them. Starting with your naming the way that we can be in the world as being of small mind and complaining heart. Mm. I thought, oh my goodness, I know that. And it can feel so hard to work with that. I can feel the tininess of it. Mm. And you also talked about allowing ourselves to be infused, which I think is such a necessary way of working with all of this, is to keep on seeing what we can do to allow, to be infused, is to allow things through, is not to grasp for them, which is why your advice about how to listen to this, I think, was so helpful, to not come at it in a sort of intellectual way, but to see what arises in you as we hear it. And there's a noisy plane about to come over. I'm just going to try and speak over it.
I'm just going to pause.
I could do like a little dance or something you while you just like while the plane goes over.
Loud at the same. You said something when you were talking about being awake in terror in the night, which had a huge effect on me, as you said it, which you said, when we can know, you said, when you can know that there is something like you. And I think that this you that the psalmist is talking about is exactly this extraordinary thing, which is to know that we are of something that is like us, or that we are like that you, whether that you appears to us in a mountain or in the sea or in a deep sense of coming home or in the eyes of another or even in something that seems very familiar to us, that they're all reflections of something, that we are not that. It's way bigger than us, but we are like it and we are of it. And this is exactly when I'm most afraid as I often am, this is exactly what I've forgotten, is I'm like, I've got my feet on a sort of concrete floor here and I've got a stone table that I'm sitting at, and I am like that.
Mm.
And when what the psalm kind of invites us to do is to find in everything not that which is alien, but that which is like us.
Yeah.
Even though it's beyond us,
yeah,
transcends us. That, I think, is exactly, that is the deep sensibility that's in this psalm, and it's the one that we forget, and it's the one that we are mostly have not been, most of us have not had a chance to be really deeply exposed to, because we don't have practices that will bring us into contact with it, and we're not in a relationship that will bring us into contact with it, and we don't have poetry that will bring us into contact with it. But so many people from so many different cultures over all of history have, there have been people who've awakened to that, and it's a huge homecoming. But also I think it's what allows us to be creative and to be loving and to be ethical and to reach beyond ourselves to make things that will improve things that aren't just about getting what I want. All of that is right in what you said about knowing ourselves in the middle of the night as in relationship with something that is like us. I'm so grateful that you said it that way.
Mm. I'm also struck, Justin, I know we're kind of probably near the end of this, but this whole feeling of this psalm is basically, I've put all my eggs in your basket. You know, this, I am completely dedicated, and yet I'm, do God knows what, to pretend that that's not true. It's like, by virtue of my humanness, when he says, you, only you, you are my share and my cup, you have drawn my lot, and it has fallen out agreeably. It's like, the feeling I get from that, it's like, oh yeah, I have put all my eggs in this basket, and I'm just fighting against the fact that I have put all my eggs in this basket. Just having like a tantrum that I put my eggs in this basket, but the fact is I have put my eggs in this basket. I'm done for on the path, you know. It's like when I've stepped on, I stepped on a long time ago, and I give myself up to it, and the way I'm in a massive tantrum about that and pretending that's not true. And I love the way that it kind of points to that part of us, which is just true. It's like, I am held by my own choice. It's like, it's a relationship.
And I think you've just summed up what being human is so beautifully. Yeah. I've put all my eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my best to protest about it and to pretend that it's not true.
Yeah.
And that's what we're being invited to see.
Mm.
It's fantastic.
This is really an amazing way to begin a day, Justin. I'm just really grateful that you chose this and that we're speaking this way.
Mm. Well, maybe we'll come back to some more psalms. This is one of Nachman of Bratslav, who I've mentioned a few times before, who was an amazing spiritual teacher.
He seems like my friend, and I've got no idea.
Yeah, you have no idea who he is.
His name is Nachman of Bratslav. I think that he must be my friend.
He must be your friend. he, in the 17th century, I think that's when he was around, Nachman. Anyway, he picked 16 psalms that he said were particularly, of all the hundreds that there are, were particularly powerful healing psalms. And this is his number one. It's really? Number 16. So maybe over the, you know, the months and who knows years that we might be doing this project, over time we'll cycle around to some other ones and see, you know, see what they bring.
Amazing.
Well, I'm so glad to have begun the day also this way.
Yeah, me too. It's really beautiful, and I wish you a very lovely holiday in Croatia, Justin, and I'm gonna have a week here in Findhorn in Scotland. It's already a lovely day, and a deer has run past the window where I'm sitting, and there was a whole lot of fun to be had, so I'm very excited.
Great. Well, have a wonderful day.
Thank you. And so we'll be back next Sunday, the normal time of 9 o'clock, with another source that I will inevitably find from my realms of Findhorn, which will be wildly, probably spiritual and slightly off the wall. So you can look forward to that. And thank you everybody for being here with us and for being part of Turning Towards Life. It's a very big joy to do this every week.
Bye everyone.